We're not a human having a spiritual experience, we're a spiritual being having a human experience. And so in the end, it's not so much whether you're born a female or a male, you're a spiritual being. And so in a sense, even though if your gender is male or female, you have both parts inside of you. So we have the yin and the yang, we have the male and the female. And so as a man, it's super important to also live and act out your vulnerable side. And I think this is, yeah, like you said, a lot because of history, because of false role models, because of conditioning, society, and also it's closely connected to this patriarchal world we're living in. And everything is yang-based, everything is masculine, right? It's about, yeah, success, about the mind, about logic. That's all yang male qualities. It's about doing things, getting out, acting. And it's not so much about the yin. The yin is more passive. The yin is intuition. The yin is going inwards, right?
Yeah, that gut feeling.
Exactly. And that is part of the reason why all these transpersonal modalities like ayahuasca are, in my opinion, so booming and becoming so popular nowadays. Yeah. Because people are missing these yin qualities in their lives, and especially men. I actually do believe it's one of the solutions of this world. Like, the future will be female. And if we do this shift, then a lot will change.
This is Conversations with Changemakers with me, your host, Gary Tirola. Every week I bring you an inspiring leader that is rethinking what it means to be a changemaker. During these conversations, I slowly peel back the layers of the minds of our future leaders that are using their skills to positively impact this world. Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of Conversations with Changemakers. And besides for the exciting guests, I must say the exciting part of this journey is sitting in different types of places and interviewing people all over the world. Right now, I am on the River Main in Frankfurt, parked in my camper van, motorhome that Claire and I are traveling around the world with. And I'm sitting here with Chris White, or most of you might know him as Student of Love and Life. Now, I came across this amazing, sensitive, incredible change-making man on Instagram. And I'm going to read you his bio so you can actually understand what this man is all about. Rational and spiritual bridge builder, consciousness coach, peace warrior, sensitive man. Now, my question is going to be, why, first of all, welcome. Why is it so important for men, particularly, to tap into their sensitive and vulnerable nature?
First of all, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure. It's also, like we talked already, but before this podcast, it's beautiful how synchronistically this all happened, that I'm sitting here in this camper van now. So to your question, I think it's one of the most fundamental things nowadays, because we're still taught and conditioned with a wrong sense of masculinity. And I know this for myself, and I believe you can relate as well. It's just when you grow up, we are still taught that a man has to be in a certain way. Like, we have to be strong, we have to lead, we have to be masculine. The only emotion usually we're allowed to express is anger, because it shows we're an alpha, we're decisive, you know, all that kind of stuff. But we all know men also have a few more emotions than anger, right? And so I realized this all over the world when I'm doing a lot of conscious men circles and so on, how really vital this work is for men to open up, to give them a vulnerable space to share and to show them really, yeah, from a very, very vulnerable side. And that's so beautiful what happens then.
Do you believe that nature of what we call macho-ness or manliness or whatever you call it in your culture or language has really came from a protection mechanism from the war days, etc.? And we've kind of now come out of the war era and stepped into another war, which we call technology. And I feel men, in particular males all around the world, are unable to cope with this influx of like images, noise, people, etc. And I don't know. I think so. The South African and German culture are very, very similar. Like, it's, you got to be a man. And like your father taught you, you got to be a man. But the question really is, what does it mean to be a man? And what has it meant to you?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's closely related to spirituality. And I always like to say that, or I like this quote, that we're not a human having a spiritual experience. We're a spiritual being having a human experience. And so in the end, it's not so much whether you're born a female or a male, you're a spiritual being. And so in a sense, even though if your gender is male or female, you have both parts inside of you. So we have the yin and the yang. We have the male and the female. And so as a man, it's super important to also live and act out your vulnerable side. And I think this is, yeah, like you said, a lot because of history, because of false role models, because of conditioning, society. And also it's closely connected to this patriarchal world we're living in. And everything is yang based. Everything is masculine, right? It's about, yeah, success, about the mind, about logic. That's all yang male qualities. It's about doing things, getting out, acting. And it's not so much about the yin. The yin is more passive. The yin is intuition. The yin is going inwards, right?
Yeah, that
is,
feeling.
Exactly. And that is part of the reason why all these transpersonal modalities like ayahuasca are, in my opinion, so booming and becoming so popular nowadays. Yeah. Because people are missing these yin qualities in their lives, and especially men. And so it's so important to, I actually do believe it's one of the solutions of this world. Like, the future will be female. And if we do this shift, then a lot will change. The beauty is, if I may add this, when I went to Thailand to do a lot of Taoist work, they basically believe that the polar star is closely linked to the yang energy. And there's another star, it's called Vega, and he brings the yin energy, the female energy. And now in astrology, the interesting thing is that the polar star is step by step going out of our solar system, or like at least he's departing, or he's going further away from Earth. And on the other hand, this yin energy of the Vega star is coming more and more into our solar system. So even from that perspective, there are many other examples of like ancient cultures and this connection of the yin and yang that is so, so important. Yeah.
Well, it just goes to show that nothing happens for no reason. And I find how the world is turning out. For the first time in our history, we're getting a lot more female presidents, female heads of state, a lot of female heads of companies. And I didn't know this about the Vega star, like coming more towards us. And it kind of makes sense. You're seeing men, especially in our era and in our age group, are becoming more proud to show off their feminine nature. And that's one thing ayahuasca taught me. Like when I was doing when I did my first and only ayahuasca journey over a weekend, the female energy is not a flimsy or a weak energy. It is by far the strongest energy, the most resilient, but the most adaptive.
Yeah, very true.
And I'm glad to see that you also follow a plant medicine journeys, because it does. For me, I think it just kicks the obstacles out the way, yeah? And I'm tired of the macho obstacle in the way.
Yeah.
Almost stopping the flow.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to read it was your last Instagram post, and I really connected with it. It says, "You can live with both the rational and the spiritual, the profane and the sacred. But if you only live with the profane, that's your choice. But then don't complain that there is no magic in your life." And it's a photo of you doing breath work on yourself and you receiving breath work. Now, you throw the word spiritual a lot around there. I believe it's linked to a deeper sense of consciousness. Now, in explaining this Instagram post, what do you mean by the profane? And what does spirituality mean for you?
Interesting question. You know, in the end, it's words, right? Words already have the problem that they're coming from the intellect. So in the way, they're a concept of our mind. And so they can't go beyond the mind. That's already the limitation of words. And so in a sense, for a long part of my journey, I actually didn't call it even the spiritual. I call it the other side. So I call it the rational and the other side.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's already, if you tell someone I'm spiritual, there are so many rational people who are already like, oh, I don't want to be, you know, close with that, or they just close up, you know. And so the other side, or words in the end, it's really sometimes challenging to phrase that in the right way. What I mean, though, is that most people nowadays are just living a life with the profane. And what I mean by that is that they're just ruled by the mind and by logic, by reason, again, by the young, you know, we're in the young quality field. And so what happens if you do this is, yeah, you have all these external success, money, fame. And I know that because I've been there as well. You know, I had a beautiful penthouse right here across the river, actually.
Oh, wow.
Overlooking the skyline. I was driving a super sports car and I had all this stuff. And yet I wasn't fulfilled. Yeah. I missed meaning. I was so far away from any inner peace. And that made me realize, wow, this can't be the solution. So I always say, I actually wish everyone to become wealthy at one point, because it will show you it's not the solution. And what you're chasing will not make you happy. So what it is then, what makes us happy? I believe it's this other side, and it's the spiritual, the consciousness, the light, the, God, however you want to phrase that for you, it doesn't really matter.
The unknown, I suppose.
The unknown, yeah, there are many words for that. And it's again also a bit connected to what you experience, what your background is. But what it all means is there is something beyond the mind, beyond your sense of self, beyond your story of Gary, of your name, of your age, of your gender. There is something more than that.
Yeah.
And I like to call it the pure soul, the real self.
Yeah.
And that's also the beauty of ayahuasca and all these transpersonal modalities, because they give you glimpses of that. And usually in everyday reality for us, because we are so stuck in the rational, in our mind, it's so hard to escape that, right?
Yeah.
We all know that it's so very difficult. And these transpersonal modalities like ayahuasca, like breathwork, like all that kind of stuff, they are strong enough to break through this veil and to really show you for a few hours what else there is. And that's the beauty, because afterwards your whole world will usually change.
Yeah. I think what's so important in this world, there's lots of motivational videos out there and a lot of celebrity status, wellness, change makers, etc. And I think it's very similar. I find it very similar to something like ayahuasca, for instance, right? Because for majority of the world, it is very hard to, on your own, find that hope within. And I think something like ayahuasca, like, again, it opens our consciousness up and shows us it's possible.
Yeah.
So again, it's not something that you should be relying on all the time, but you should rely on it at least once, so you can actually understand that it's anything is possible.
Yeah.
And the unknown is way larger than the physical reality we sit in right now.
I always say there are two different ways usually people wake up. You know, it's also interesting. We call this wake up, the process, right? And usually people first have to hit rock bottom to really wake up. So it can be in the form of a crisis. They go bankrupt. They maybe lose a loved one. They maybe develop a terrible disease. Something really that shakes them so much that it creates something like the wedge experience. So it's a bit like it opens you up in a little way and generates this glimpse through your real being and shows you who you really are. That's the first option. The second option is you come in contact with a transpersonal modality like ayahuasca, like plant medicine, like psychedelics, like breath work, like the dark room, all these kind of stuff, that modalities that really have the power to shock you so much and to open you up in that way as well.
And if you have both, you're exploding.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you ever hit a rock bottom, or did you first find yourself with them?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I very much relate to this concept of the wounded healer. So, you know, again, how do we come to consciousness? It's most of the time because a wound is inside of us that really makes us search. And then most people first, again, try to search it in the external. So I was no different. I was trying to find the solution in working harder, making more money, Yeah, even like going to the best Western medicine, people treat myself. I got multiple checkups on myself. And in the end, it always turned out you're perfectly healthy. Nothing is wrong with you. But I had what is called IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. So a chronic thing, right? When doctors can't find anything, they're like, oh, you have IBS. That's it. And then when you tried everything that there is in our logical, external, Western scientific world, you start to go a different route. And I was lucky to have a mother who was already very spiritual. And usually I always like, you know, I was like, oh, what is this bullshit all about? Yeah. And then I started, it opened me up and I started to look more into that. And this is when my journey basically started. And
oh, wow. What was the first step for you? What modality did you find?
It was really, really beautiful. I went to China to do a semester abroad back then. And I was at a very, very good university there. And I heard that one day there will be this talk of a traditional Chinese medicine master. And yeah, he will give a lecture. He's super famous. And it would be all in Chinese. And although I learned Chinese, I was like, oh, man, in this level, I will not understand anything. Mm. And yet still inside of me, I had this, you know, this connection, I was really drawn to it. So I went and I looked into this lecture hall. There were maybe 200, 300 people sitting there. And I saw this one woman and she saw me and she's like, and I was asking her, like, do you speak English? And she's like, yeah, come. And so it was really synchronistic again. I sit down next to her. It turns out she's an English teacher, but she wants to change profession to go more into the traditional Chinese medicine area. And so she became like, sort of my dolmetscher in that moment. And it was really beautiful because then she connected me with him. So a week later, I sit in this super old ancient building with him and he's looking at me in this private room and he gives me a counseling and I don't understand the word he's saying and she's dolmetsching everything, she's translating. And he just looks at me and without me telling him anything, he's like, there. And he points to my stomach and he's like, blocked negative emotions. And I was like, what? How does he first of all know that I have problems in that area, right? And then he told me I have to massage myself every morning and so on. I was like, what the fuck? And so for the first 2 months, I think, I sat in my little dorm room and I massaged myself, but nothing really happened. And then I think after 2 months, one morning, I sat down, I massaged myself, and tears were pouring down my face. And I was like, what is going on, you know? And back then I didn't even know what it was, but I slowly got access to these blocked negative emotions. And that was the initiation, and it was really beautiful. It started my spiritual path. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, that is very profound. I follow ancient Chinese medicine as closely as Ayurveda.
Yeah.
And it is the act, I think, of, I believe, should I say, of giving, changing the energy we have in the direction externally to internally. Mm-hmm. And it's almost the... You took your energy and started giving yourself love again in order to nourish your body, in order to break through.
And it's also this kind of holistic viewpoint, you know, like in what do we do in the West? Again, it's very interesting because it's so young, you know. A doctor will look at you and he will see stomach problems. So you will just treat the symptoms you have, right?
Yeah.
So you just treat the stomach. But sometimes it can turn out, and we all know this, that maybe something with our stomach is not right, but... It's actually not, it's just the symptom. The root goes way deeper. And the root is not physical at all. The root is often, very, very often, blocked emotions and all that kind of stuff. And I see this because I'm a breathwork facilitator. I do lots of transpersonal modalities. And I see this all the time with myself, but also with the hundreds of people that went through these transpersonal sessions with me.
Okay. That's a great segue into... You've gone through your own rock bottom and you've gone through your own exploration, which I'm sure you go through every day still. It's a journey. It's not a destination. Now, you work with individuals that were maybe in the same position you were maybe worse or not as worse. How do you guide people in order to be perceptive towards the hope, the possibility?
Yeah. So first, for me, the most important thing that I learned is that I actually don't do anything. I'm just a tool, you know, and that's the beauty. Like the best moments are the moments when Chris, sort of my name, steps back and I'm just sort of guided by something else. And the things just come through me. And that is That is the real beauty. And usually then again, it also makes sense in another way, because I'm not doing anything, because the only thing I'm doing is I'm making you finding the answers within yourself. Mm. I believe the most important thing that I can do is to reconnect you with your inner wisdom.
Mm.
And your inner wisdom is just amazing. We, most people nowadays, they just forgot that there is something like an inner guide, yeah, inner wisdom. And reconnecting people with that is just pure magic, because then the real healing starts.
I feel we're trapped in a world that demands research or scientific proof for it to be real.
Yeah.
And we almost have to change our definition of success into this unknown world.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, especially from where I'm from, are scared to step into this unknown, because it's not revered or backed up by doctors or professions or anything. And we have to rely on ourselves. Yeah. We haven't relied on ourselves for generations.
Yeah.
And it's, I believe coaches like you, I'm also in the coaching space where it's handholding. It really is handholding, because it's tough going through this this journey. And I think we're in a position to help people reconnect with themselves.
Yeah. It's also, like you said, it's a lot about giving people the courage and making them see that there's so much more to them than what they think that there is, you know. It's like really making them see that, yeah, there's so much light in them, and that courage can take you anywhere. And but again, like you said, it's actually the most frightening and scary thing you can do in this world, I believe. You know, many ancient cultures call this the hero's journey, because it needs a real hero to go through that.
Of course.
And you know, many, I see this often, it's a really interesting topic. I see this very often if you talk about spirituality. There are many, many people who deceive themselves. Like, I traveled also all over the world and so on. And in many, especially in these communities, you see many people who are like, everything is love and light and like dancing around and stuff like this. But it's a bit like this. My shaman always said, there are above the horizon people and below the horizon people. Above the horizon people, they say everything is love and light, everything is beautiful, like this, you know? And then there are below the horizon people, and they have realized that in order to get to the light, you first have to dive heads in to the darkness and to really go through the darkness, because there is only one way out, and that is through. And only when you made this really through all your darkness, through all your shadows, through all your subconscious blocks, then you come to the light. But there is no shortcut in pretending, oh, I'm already love and light, you know? And then many of these people, they're living in Bali and in, you know, Byron Bay, and they're actually really deceiving themselves and running away from their problems and not starting with themselves, I believe. So the best thing we always can do, I believe, is to start with yourself.
Now,
yeah,
something that's just popped into my mind. What do you think the difference is between someone being in their karmic dharma right now and their path is to be that superficial love and light person versus having someone like you nearby and being able to allow them to see that you gotta go ahead first?
Yeah, interesting.
Because it is a bit of a situation that you're always able to guide a loved one. I don't want to say force. You're always able to guide a loved one or a friend through that headfirst journey. But if you step back, they can just carry on with this aura of love and light. And
yeah, you know, it's again, it's not for me, if that came across like that, I really want to tell that now. It's like, for me, it's not so much about changing anyone or judging that someone is right or wrong. I think everyone is still always trying to do their best, right? Yeah. From his or her point of view. And yet we're talking about what is real spirituality and what is real getting to your real true self and to inner self. And on this way there's so much deceptions. Like, our ego, our mind is so incredibly talented in deceiving us and in finding always new ways how to do that. And but in a way I do agree. I believe in karma, and if this is not your path, and you're stuck in this kind of superficial worldview, then it is like this. But mm-hmm. what you can always change, I think, is the way you look at things, your kind of intention behind your karmic actions, you know? And over that, you have some form of control, I do believe.
Now, you are known on Instagram. Mm. A couple of months ago, your Instagram handle was actually Master of Love and Life. Mm. And then you did a post, you changed your name to Students of Love and Life, I believe because of people, you changing your perception, as well as people reaching out to you. Now, what stood out to me above everything was that, one, you were admitting that you might have superficially named yourself something incorrectly. Mm. And two, you have always posted photos with a white rabbit mask. Mm. And you were separating your ego, your individualism for the message behind who you really are. Why such a big and brave move? Like separating yourself from your message and correcting yourself on social media when you found you hit a little bump in the road.
Yeah. So, interesting question. I'm glad that I'm able to answer this because, you know, this name, Master of Love and Life, it actually came from a whole different kind of kind of background. So, back then, when I started this journey, I was thinking about, should I do a master degree? Yeah. And I was still back in my linear thinking of, okay, a new elite master degree would maybe solve my problems, right? It was really back in the past. And then I sort of had this idea in my mind, wait, I could also invent my own master degree and do like a spiritual master where I do just 12 one-month challenges and I just invent my own courses and do that kind of stuff. Long story short, that's why I did. That's where this name is coming from. It's coming from this master's degree. So it's not linked to me telling I'm the master of love and life. You know, it was coming from that background. But obviously, of course, it's very clear that if people find me or just see this name, then people think I'm claiming to be the master.
Yeah.
So for me, this was important to change this at one point because I'm certainly not the master.
Yeah, it was confusing people, taking them away once again from your message.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, like you said, what is the point of the mask? Again, what do I know? I just try to trust my inner voice and my inner guidance. And I was sitting one day in meditation and I was really curious how I could share this master with other people, inspire people, but at the same time, don't be trapped in the ego again and to make this about the flashy, cool guy who travels all the world and does these fancy challenges and promotes his ego. And I was really contemplating about this. And this one day I was sitting down and it really came to me in meditation that I should use a mask and that it should be a white rabbit mask. And that's what I did. I just Googled, I got a mask and started this journey. And the beauty is, you know, it always has a bit both sides. So on the one hand, I really like that this mask allows me to take myself, the me, out of my message, to just inspire people without, this is Chris being cool or something, you know, this is awesome. At the same time, however, I also see the downfalls or the downsides of that, because I'm proclaiming, and we already talked about this, to be vulnerable. Mm. And the mask is in a way still a form of hiding, right? I'm not showing you my real face. And if I do believe this is one of the most essential things there is out there, to be fully vulnerable and to show yourself, then this limits me in a way. So I'm always a bit in this kind of, and I'm still not sure, maybe in the future I will drop the mask, because for me it's like, and in my breathworks and retreats, I'm not wearing a mask anyways.
Yeah,
right?
That's so, what I was going to ask
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, I'm not wearing a mask there, for sure not. It's just for Instagram, for all these social media channels.
I can appreciate that completely. It's your message really is to separate your persona and your ego from the message. But I also understand where you're coming from, because your message is vulnerability. And right now, you do have a mask on. But I think what is important to know is you're not really hiding behind a mask. You're using the mask to propel the message.
Yeah.
And if you decide to change that and take the mask off on Instagram, that's cool. That's okay. Like, that was meant to be.
Yeah.
I think whatever needs to unfold is going to unfold.
Exactly. I just trust my intuition and it always leads me the right way. I'm very sure.
That gut feeling that so many people forget about.
Yeah. I don't know whether you saw it, but I just launched a 4-week intuition online course where I really teach people about how to get in contact with their intuition. And I think we talked earlier that there are two things that can really open you up to deeper levels of consciousness. I actually have to say there's another one. The two ones are just a bit separate from that because they're modu shockers, right? Mm. We said you have to have a crisis first or you have to have this wedge experience of like these big shockers like ayahuasca or breathwork to really open you up. But there's a third way, and the third way is by reconnecting to your intuition.
Mm.
Again, interesting thing, all connected, yin and yang. Yang again, the rational, the mind, yin, intuition, going inwards, trusting your gut feeling, following your heart. So for me, really going out there and trusting my intuition was, wow, one of the best things I've ever done in my life. Mm. And I think it's so powerful, but at the same time, it's a gradual approach. You know, it's a bit like one of my teachers always said, intuition is like the shy deer.
Mm.
So you can only reconnect with that by creating a trust relationship first. And it's not like one time, okay, let's do it. You know, it doesn't work like that. You will shy it away. So it really needs to be in the stillness of your being. And there are other techniques how you can do this, which I teach in this course. But yeah, it's super, super powerful.
What are some of the first steps that you can recommend to listeners to reconnect with intuition? Obviously, maybe not as far as a plant medicine journey and ayahuasca, because some people are still scared of that, but some things people can start at home.
Yeah. So one thing that is really beautiful, again, this came to me in the stillness of my meditation. So it was just a download. And it's something that I call the up or down technique. And it's basically the heart and the core of this course I'm teaching during 4 weeks. But what it is all about, the basis, is that there are laws in the universe, and there are basically these two laws that determine something. So one law is that every indication of a good development is up in this world, right? And there are many examples of that. So we say like something is uplifting. And on the other hand, something is down pulling, right? This is the other law. So even when we look at the world, we grow up. Everything is upwards, right? A growth scale, a scale figure goes up, right? Down, on the other hand, is decay. People fall down when they die. But even the concept of heaven and hell is based on that. Heaven is this place up in the sky. Mm. Hell is the lower world, the lower realm, right? Even when I'm doing hand gestures right now, like if I welcome you, I'm opening my hands up, you know, like this. If I celebrate, I raise my fist, right? No one celebrates by putting his fists down, you know? It's just a law, innate law of the universe. And the beauty is that you can use that. So the way it works is whenever you have something that troubles you and you would like to get to know the real inner voice of your intuition, then what you do according to this technique is you take a quiet place, you close your eyes, you phrase this question that you have, because usually it's a decision you want to, right? There's something that you're asking yourself. So you're asking this question inside your head, and then you send it down to your heart, and then you perceive. And the perceiving part is exactly like I said before. You perceive whether there is a force that is lifting you up or whether there is a force that is pulling you down. And you can feel it. You can learn to feel that. And if it's lifting you up, it's a yes. It's a go for it. If it's pulling you down, it's a no. The beauty is that, you know, many people, including myself, I always struggled to really trust my intuition because I was always doubting, is it really my intuition or is it my head pretending to be my intuition?
Mm.
You know, this kind of ego again coming in the way. And the beauty is that this technique is bypassing your mental guardians. It's bypassing your ego and your mind. And why is that? Because the moment you phrase it in your head, which is, first of all, still an intellectual thing, right? Then you send it down. The perceiving part is just based on feeling. It's sensing. You close your eyes and you just feel if something is uplifting me or down pulling me.
Mm.
There's no thinking involved at all, you know? And that's the beauty, because you skip your mind and really tap into the real power of your own intuition.
And this is actually the real tenet of meditation, essentially.
Yeah.
Sitting
quietly,
reflecting.
True.
And meditation scares some people. It's this Eastern modality again, you know, like of a yogi sitting in a cave in the Himalayas. But again, I think it's about decompressing, quietening down, going inwards, and allowing us to feel again. I think for too long we've spoken too much, and it's quite ironic saying this on a podcast, but like we've spoken too much, we've thought too much, we've tried to intellectualize too many things. And not just like trying to feel the flow of that river. I was sitting next to, the other day, I was sitting next to the River Main, and I was watching like the river flow. It was actually in Rüsselsheim. I was watching the river flow, and what stuck out to me was water doesn't intellectualize anything. It just flows, and it like, you know, and like if there's a rock in the way, an obstacle, it flows around it. It's not having arguments of which way I'm going, and etc. And it's we can really take a life lesson from that. So
giving up control.
Completely. So where can people get the intuition course?
It's on my website, masterofloveandlife.com, and then under I think work with me, they can find that.
Guys, I'll put the links in the show notes, so go check it out. So if you want to tap into that gut feeling that holds so much wisdom, I try and tap into it every day. I'm no expert, but we're trying.
I would like to add one thing, because what you said is really beautiful. You know, I actually, many people, when they think about intuition, for them, it's like, it's some gut feeling, you know, but it's not, we don't really value that, right? The interesting thing is that I believe this is the future. It's our sixth sense. I believe infinite powers lie in our intuition. And interesting thing is that many, many successful people, even many successful business people, I was lucky to work with some billionaires together myself. I was a Peter Thiel mentee, for example, back then in my time. But also many, many successful people in the field of arts, of history, of science. Even guys like Albert Einstein, if you look at what they said, they heavily relied on intuition. We always think of Einstein like this guy who is so sharp-minded, brilliant, you know. And then you listen to what he said, and he actually said he had one of those things that he would go into his quiet place. And so there's this story where a really famous guy wanted to visit Einstein at his home, and his wife was like, "I'm sorry, he's in his bathtub." And he's like, "Yeah, but then get him, you know, we had this appointment." And then the wife was like, "No, I can't. It's like he doesn't allow anyone to disturb him during his 1.5 bath session, because in this bath session is where he got all his breakthroughs, all his scientific breakthroughs." And this is kind of amazing, because it shows maybe Einstein wasn't really spiritual, you know, he didn't sit in meditation, but it's the same thing. It's the stillness. It's the not doing of things. You know, it's when you really, lie in your bathtub or whatever it is, that you, I believe, come in contact with the collective consciousness, and then things can come to you and come like a download, right?
Yeah, of course.
Down from you, from your higher self. And that's what Einstein did. He said later on in a very beautiful quote that he didn't make any of his discoveries through linear rational thinking. They all came from this intangible place of intuition to him. Which is amazing, right?
It's about unlearning, like unconnecting.
Sure. Remembering, who we are.
So I want to move on to your self-experiments and your monthly challenges. And you briefly mentioned one of your monthly challenges to me now. I think it's your latest one, where, I don't know if it was your latest one, where you lived as a homeless person for 1 month.
No, that was already a year ago.
Or was that a year ago?
Yeah.
Now, that interests me a lot because I come from a country, South Africa. We've got lots of homeless people, lots of unemployment. I've been to Middle East where there's no homeless people. And it's not because there's no one homeless. It's because either the weather's too harsh or they don't allow people in without a job, etc. You come to Germany in Frankfurt and there's the odd homeless person in a corner. And my heart always feels heavy for homeless people. And I always wonder, like, how did you get in this situation? and all that. And I believe there's such goodness in the people that are behind these pieces of cardboard.
Oh, yes.
What are some of the lessons, some of the wisdom that you picked up as 1 month as a homeless person, and what all happened?
Yeah. So that was one of the most challenging yet rewarding things I've ever done in my life. You know, I was born very privileged. Money was usually never an issue. I have this super successful family. Like my father, you know, I remember times when he was driving a Bugatti, I was driving a Ferrari behind him, stuff like this, you know. So money was really never an issue. And I was successful myself. But then I was really contemplating, like, what, you know, maybe I was just lucky. And then I went into this whole other direction and I sold everything. I went on the spiritual path for years. And I learned a lot, like meditation, like breath work, like these transpersonal modalities, like so much. And I healed a lot. And yet, also maybe partly because I spent time in all these communities and I saw, wow, there are so many people deceiving themselves, like how self-realized they actually already are. And I was really wondering, how much is this of use if I'm really in a situation that is really challenging, you know? So I really wanted to see, will meditation, will positive affirmations, will all these morning rituals I was doing, all that kind of stuff that I learned, will this be of any help if I'm in a situation like that? When I'm living on the streets, when I don't have no money and stuff like this, you know? So that's what I did. I put away all my belongings. I just took a sleeping bag and a mattress. I picked a German city. I always wanted to pick some city outside of Germany, but then I decided for Germany in the end because I realized, if I do this in South America or something, no one, first of all, is going to believe a Western-looking guy to be homeless. And then there's also the language barrier. So I did it in Germany, but I picked a city that I'm not familiar with. And so I went there.
Which city was it?
It was Freiburg in Germany. It's not too small, but also not super, super big. And it was absolutely incredible. First of all, I have to say that even though I did this challenge, I'm not claiming to have made any real homeless experience, right? Because in the end, it was just an experiment. And there is a difference between voluntarily going into the situation for 1 month with knowing that, after 1 month, I'm going back and I will have all my stuff again, you know, or really being forced it to be in that situation. So I'm not claiming anything to have made a real homeless experience. And yet I do believe that for someone who was as privileged as I was, it was still the closest I could get to what it feels to have nothing, right? In a setting of a course. So it was really interesting. One of the most beautiful things I realized is that all these things I learned, they actually helped me so much. There were moments there when I was collecting cans and bottles because I didn't want to bag. This was not, I have money. It also didn't feel right to bag. So I even did something good for the environment, right? Yeah. So I collected cans and bottles, which you can do. And I decided to fast. I just ate once a day and I was really inspired by Gandhi who did this. So he taught actually homeless people in India to fast because it's such a beautiful thing what happens. Usually most homeless people I've met, they're malnourished. They only eat really, really bad stuff because again, this shows how fucked up this world is in a way. What do you eat when you don't have a lot of money? The cheapest things out there are like McDonald's, like potato, chips or fries, you know? Soft drinks are often cheaper than water, all that kind of crazy stuff, you know? So of course you eat that to just get the sense of being sated and filled. And so many of them are actually malnourished and even are sometimes obese. There's this hunger obesity paradox that I also only came to learn when I lived on the streets, you know. You always think as a Westerner, you think like, how can someone be be obese when you're living on the streets?
Mm.
Yeah, of course, because it's no calories, you know, it's like zero, how do you say, empty calories.
Yeah.
It's just so not nutritious what they eat and consume there. I mean, you must know, you're like into that. And so fasting is a game changer because of that, because you can afford maybe one or two meals a day that have like, yeah, they are more nutritious, that are more like satisfying and fulfilling. But at the same time, the biggest change is the change in mind, because you are not a victim anymore. You voluntarily, like a spiritual thing, you decided, I'm going to fast now. So you are in control. And that's such a game changer, because most homeless people, and I was the same in the beginning, you just roam around and you're constantly hunting for food, for something to eat, because you don't have enough food, all of that, right? So when you decide to fast, it's a game changer. It's like you have freedom of mind for other things, for really, for the important things. And then maybe the other really beautiful thing was really to figure out how much meditation helped me through that time. So I always meditated, and in the end I begged again, but not for myself. I made like one of those cupboards, like you said earlier. And I wrote on there that I don't want any money for myself, that every single penny I get, I will collect and buy other homeless people a meal from that. And so I did this, but even though most people don't really read your signs, most people still look down on you, most people still treat you like you're scum, like you don't belong to society. And that is the hardest thing that I realized. Like when you're sitting there, it's not so much I don't have enough food, it's more the lack of love, the lack of affection, the lack of, yeah, someone seeing you as a human being, as part of the society. That is the hardest thing to cope with. And I have a very strong psyche, and you know, but imagine most of these people who are there, they don't have that, right? And so this was really interesting for me to see, and also very challenging. And yeah, so when I begged, even for others, people still would look down on me. And I always tried to meditate simultaneously when I would sit down. And for the first 2.5-3 weeks, it was awful. Like I could, because when you close your eyes and you're so sensitive to the energy, you can feel, wow, I got in contact with primal fear of someone is would just come and beat me up. You know, all these kind of things resurfaced. And usually I have a really easy time to enter at least some form of transcendent meditative state, I would say. But on the streets, it was almost impossible. And then I had this one day, I think it was day 15, day 16. You can read this on my Instagram channel in detail. But I was sitting there, and then at this one point, I was breaking through. And I was reaching this transcendent meditative state that I didn't manage to get or to get into like the weeks before, you know. And this was so beautiful because I was so filled with love, with joy, with absolute bliss. And yet nothing externally changed, you know. The people would still look down on me. And then I opened my eyes, and it was, I was so filled with love. And it was just for me the most beautiful sign that, again, the external world is so not important. What is important is your inner world. And that this is, yeah, this is what really makes all the experiences.
Wow, that is a, that's a very powerful point to leave it, and for the listeners to really contemplate what you've just, well, for me to contemplate what you just said, and the listeners to. Thank you for sharing your story, like of really of love and life, even though you're still a student. It's you really have become, you put yourself in the world as a vulnerable person, and you've experienced a lot, and you really do have a incredible story that is way longer than 45 minutes. It's way longer than a lifetime. And I think what you're doing in sharing your story and being there for others is admirable and very much needed in this world. So thank you really from the depths of my heart and soul. It's inspiring. And I think in a world like we live in today, I think inspiration goes a long way.
Thank you so much for your words. It's in the end, it's not really me. It's again, just, I'm just a tool and something comes through. But yeah, it's So I just hope that when people listen to that, that they see what's possible when you trust your inner wisdom and when you have the courage to really leave the mind and the complex of this world of the rational.
Yeah, of course. So Chris, I've got a couple of questions. If you could just fire some answers back at me. Okay, question one. What do you think the soul is?
Infinite potential and your real self.
What's your definition of God?
It's love and in everything.
Complete the sentence. The world needs?
More real self connection.
What is the purpose of the human experience?
The purpose is that we all have a task to fulfill in this life and that this will progress us on our evolution of who we are as a species.
And for the last one, how important is human connection and why?
Oh, it's one of the most important things there are. In the end, I mean, it always sounds cheesy, but we are all one. And when you go down this road, you really realize that this is true, that there is no separation, that I am in you. Yeah. But it's, if I may add this, it's again, if I talk about this, even if I hear myself, I feel like my rational is rebelling, you know, because this is something you can only directly experience. So everyone who's listening to that, I can only recommend to directly experience that in the form of these transpersonal modalities, for example, that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Well, brother, I'm so happy that the universe conspired to bring us together in Frankfurt, a beautiful city that you live in. and I'm sure our paths are going to cross many, many times going hopefully. Forward, even though we're leaving Frankfurt in 30 minutes. I will be keenly following you around, you and the white rabbit mask. And I urge everyone else to please reach out to Chris. Where is the best place people can reach out to you?
I think Instagram is still the main channel I'm active. So Student of Love and Life at Instagram and also on my website, masterofloveandlife.com.
Yeah. Okay, guys. And if you are ready to dig deeper, please go check out Chris's Power of Intuition, his intuition course. This man has a lot of experience and he will guide you to a higher place. I know it.
Thank you so much for having me, Gary. It really was a pleasure. And yeah. It's really, really beautiful to have crossed paths with you.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks.
It means so much to myself and my change-making friends that you decided to spend some of your valuable time with us. It would mean even more if you could share their inspiring message to your loved ones. As someone once told me, the only thing more powerful than changing the world every day for the good is doing it with a community. Guys, I love you and I cannot wait to welcome you back next week. Remember to reach out to me directly at hello@garytirola.com if you have any questions, or hit me up on social media, Gary_Tirola, Instagram and Facebook. I'm here for you, so let's do this together.